welcome everyone to episode 76 of the Screamcast. I am Sean DeRager, and with me, as always, is BJ Colangelo.
I'm really surprised that I'm not the one who yawns this time around.
She's had a busy 3-day weekend, people.
Super busy. Greek and, wedding. Enough said.
I've been to one. And that marriage lasted about 3 years. So
this one will last a while, but...
Okay. I was going to say, well, like, God didn't really help us stay together very long.
Whoever invented ouzo, whichever Greek bastard invented ouzo, I have some words for them.
Ouzo? What's ouzo?
They're not nice. Oh, Lord. Ouzo is a Greek liquor.
Oh, dear God.
That tastes like black licorice.
Oh, that sounds up my alley. Oh, yeah, Brad Henderson's
here, literally tastes...
Too.
Yeah, I was waiting for it. I was just going to give you shit.
Sorry.
I would be down with the ouzo for sure.
It tastes like you just took, like, 12 black jelly beans, and not even, like, good Jelly Belly ones, like, cheap, like, Dollar Tree black jelly beans, and just, like, popped them in your mouth, and then made alcohol out of it.
Nice. I love black licorice and black jelly beans. So.
Ugh.
Brad, where do you weigh in on the ouzo? Are you a black licorice fan?
I don't mind it, but I don't, like, actively eat the candy or drink anything that tastes like licorice.
Okay.
I'm not opposed to it.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, if someone gives it to me, if there's black licorice, I'll eat it, but I don't seek it out.
Right, and the same way. But
it's very much like Aerosmith. If Aerosmith comes on the radio, I might listen to it, but I don't actively put Aerosmith on.
Right.
I would be okay with it, and I was wrong. I was so wrong.
That's hilarious. There is a German type of liqueur that's a licorice flavor. I forget the name of it, but...
Jägermeister?
It's not Jägermeister, no.
Because Jäger tastes like black licorice, too.
Yeah, I forget the name of it. I had a bottle of, like, 30-year-old bottle of that stuff straight from Germany, and it was amazing. Anyway, moving along. Today, better tell everybody what we're talking about today. We are talking Student Bodies.
Woo!
And a couple of the movies in our segments, which I will cue them at.
Well, yeah, we've been slow on the segments, you know, because we had two special episodes.
Yeah, so we got some stuff to talk about. But first, let's jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow, I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
Cool.
Okay, whatever that was.
Fine, I'll go first.
All right.
Okay.
All right, I'm tired of going last.
Fine.
I'll make mine quick.
You don't have to.
I watched some. Yeah, whatever. I watched some cool shit. I watched I believe this played at Fantastic Fest. Yes, it did because it won Best Actress for Next Wave Award. I watched Felt. BJ, have you seen this?
I want to see it so bad.
Yeah, so it's directed by Jason Banker, which we spoke about with Artsploitation when Eric Bressler was on the show. I mentioned a movie called Toad Road, how Toad Road was just an oddball movie where it's even more interesting after you find out they're actually doing drugs, like real drugs in the movie. But this is by the same director, a very... very, very odd movie. Extremely uncomfortable. I was interested because there was a by Badass Digest now is Birth Movies Death. There were quote. Well, actually, Jacob Knight writes for them, and that's like the end all be all. And also,
I still like the name
Phil Noble too. Phil Noble.
I love Phil Noble.
Yeah, Phil Noble is amazing.
I also really ride or die for Meredith Borders, I think.
Yeah, Meredith Borders is great. Really Jacob Knight, he's definitely – this is the only reasons why I actually read Birth Movies Death. But anyways, besides the point, I don't know who wrote this quote, but it says, Felt gives rape culture what it deserves, which I thought was a really – like that's a pull quote that will make me want to watch a movie.
Yeah.
It's really, really heavy quote. However – I don't know how much I would agree with that. It definitely has this huge Are you yawning? this huge,
I'm so
like,
sorry.
Feminist side to it, where it becomes kind of a feminist thriller, serial killer type type thing. Not serial killer per se, but it's just kind of that the making of maybe a killer. You know, bad things that happen to a female, where it just spirals out of control, but it's kind of already out of control. So our story is already, it's already started once we meet, I think her name's Amy. Once we meet Amy, we know that something has happened to Amy, something awful. So it does have the surreal feel because automatically the, it just radiates like right off the screen where you just feel bad. Cause you're like, holy shit. Like, I don't know if I should be watching this because something really bad happened to this lady. And now we're going to watch her try to continue her life, but she's dealing with it in an odd sort of way. Not really a horror film, I would say, but there's definitely some just odd shit. It feels like it's like if Gummo was a feminist movie in a way, just kind of not the characterization, but just kind of that odd feeling throughout the film.
I'm like, so into this right now.
Like, you know, you just watch Gummo, like, it's a weird film, but you always, it's just this unsettling feeling because of just the odd shit that's happening. Am I boring you that much?
No, I am. My review so on Felt? Tired. No, but, I really want to see Felt.
I think you would enjoy it. I definitely think even the cover is eye catching. It has the scissors, like, pointing down. It's near the crotch.
It's a really nice.
So I wouldn't say Felt gives rape culture what it deserves, but it makes a huge impact and a statement with kind of the story that it's coming from a female's perspective. So, and if anybody is very, you know, the subject of rape or the subject of, you know, anything of that nature, it's not disrespectful. It's actually very much through a female's point of view and perspective, which I thought was pretty cool, being it was a male who directed. But obviously, this actress took it to a new level, and I think at that point it just kind of became her thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if the director was like, you know what, just do your own thing because this is you now. So I don't know. It felt like there could have been some improv or just, you know, her going her own way, really getting into that character and just letting go. It's a very interesting movie. I wouldn't say I loved it, but it's definitely one that I think everybody should watch. Definitely pick that up. It was released by Anchor Bay. It's on DVD, so it should be fairly cheap. Moving on to, this is depressing. This movie's called Dark Was the Night, and I was sort of excited about it just because the trailer for it, I caught clips of the trailer and I was like, oh, that could be something I would be down with. And the movie doesn't know what it wants to be. It doesn't know if it wants to be a horror film. It doesn't know if it wants to be kind of this drama. But anyways, it's this small town. The sheriff has a kid. They encounter this weird tracks in the film that are going through the town. Weird things are happening. Horses are missing. Pets are missing. And it turns out to be, you know, a creature feature. However, the setup to the film is fucking awesome. But once they introduce the creature, right before they introduce the creature and after, they just drop off into this drama. And it just gets real. It just, like, you build up that intensity. You build up that dread so fucking well with the music, with kind of the haunting vision of, like, and just the townspeople, like the small town, like all getting together, and they're like, holy shit, what the fuck is happening in our town? And then it's just like, yeah, we're gonna, like, drop all that, we're gonna put you in kind of a drama, and we're gonna show this fucking CGI monster that completely...
That was my next question. Yeah, it was whether or not it was CGI or practical.
Well, you know, it doesn't matter anymore, because I got stuff to talk about, but practical versus digital now. Based on something I watched.
But, I mean, the thing is that whether it's a CGI monster or not, yes, it takes you out of the film a little bit because it's really goofy looking. at some parts the creature does look good, but when you first, like the very first glimpse, the whole thing about monster movies is that when you first see the monster, it's supposed to shock you. It's supposed to grab you. It's supposed to pull you in. When you see the monster for the first time in a glimpse, you're like, I don't want to fucking see that. Like, I'm okay. Like, I was actually okay with never seeing the monster in this movie. Not because it looked bad, but it was just, they did such a good job of demonstrating kind of what this monster could look like, you know, because it's like one night they're eating dinner and the kid looks out the window and he's like, Dad, there's something out in the woods. And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And he's like, no, seriously, Dad, there's something out in the woods. And he goes out in the woods and he's like, you know, the cop's looking around. And he doesn't really see anything. So he goes to bed. He gets up the next morning and his partner comes in and he's like, hey, man, how's it going? He's like, you probably need to come outside for a second. And, you know, they go outside and they see these big fucking hoof tracks. And he's like, you know what? You know, this obviously is two legs. What is doing this? He's like, you know, my son said he saw something. He's like, well, I saw this too when I woke up. And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And he's like, I follow the tracks here. And they like go all through the town and like this dreadful music builds up and you're like, holy shit, like this thing's stalking the entire town, stealing shit, killing things.
And then, is it like a Jersey Devil looking thing or what?
I don't want to ruin it for people, but it's just very underwhelming. Like they could have pulled, like they literally, the way they built this movie and the editing, the music, they could have got away without ever showing the monster. And it would have been completely satisfying. But once they show the monster, it spins into a different film. And I think that's what ruined it. The director, whoever, let's see who this is. I don't know if the name, Jack Heller. I don't know who that is. But anyways, Jack, like you're really, really great at building shit up. But once they showed that monster, man, I just was like, ah, not because it looked bad, just because when they did that, the movie took a turn. It became too focused on the monster then and not enough on the characters and the dread and the buildup and kind of just the townspeople and that closest, you know, because like, you know, like Gremlins and the Blob, like how close of a small town that feels, you know, that small town feel. It had that. But it just released that and totally disregarded the rest of that and went this different direction. It was a little upsetting. So,
I'll probably still check it out. How'd you find it?
It was, I don't know, I got a screener of it.
It's the Best Buy exclusive Blu-ray art right now. I'm actually looking at it.
Gotcha.
Maybe I won't unwrap this now. Shit. Just kidding.
Well, no, I mean, I don't think
I'm going to watch it. It was $9.99. I'm totally going to watch it.
No, I mean, for $10, I mean, you're going to get of all the really low budget horror films that come out, and a lot of them are not very good, this one at least stands a chance. It's well made. Mm-hmm. Put it that way. It's a well made movie. It's just the direction went. It became like everything else when it could have been different. So, next up, director approved, by the way. This is out in the UK on Arrow Blu-ray, but Dressed to Kill, the Criterion release. I was super excited.
So jealous.
I was excited to get it because it was, you know, the 4K digital transfer, you know, Brian De Palma's unrated version came out. So I was pretty excited about it. With the audio, I think Arrow did a better job just because of the music. Because this is kind of like a erotic thriller, but in a way this is an American giallo film by De Palma. A really, really great erotic thriller if you like TNA, like from the 80s and 90s. I mean, this is super fucking early 80s, right?
Yes.
This is super early 80s.
I have the older Blu-ray release.
Or is this the later 70s? What year did this come out?
It was 80s.
80, oh, it says on the back here, 1980. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you have the Google, too.
Yeah, but I don't like to type on the computer. I'm good. but anyways, you know, it has the X rating. It has, you know, it has great features like all Criterion releases. So it's definitely something to pick up if you don't already own the UK, UK Blu-ray. It's also out like in Australia on Blu-ray, right? Something like that, by that umbrella people.
Is that the one that I got? I know I have a Blu-ray of it. I can't remember if I have. which one I have. But I have it on Blu-ray, and it looks just fine to me. I mean, I started watching. I need to finish it. I was doing a body double slash Dress to Kill double feature, and I didn't finish it, so...
Yeah, which, you know, one thing I was kind of curious about, the film grain does kind of change, and I don't know if that was what De Palma wanted, because I know that the cinematographer of this film is passed, and I was kind of curious, I was always curious maybe if putting the Arrow one together, because I believe he was alive at the time of that, versus this Criterion release. But if you don't own it, it's definitely, it's a hell of a fucking movie. It's really fucking good. It's very eerie and very creepy, and you know, it's a great De Palma horror film, but there's so many mixtures of giallo in it that it's just, you know, it becomes kind of a perfect, not a horror film, but not a horror film. And it doesn't go to that point of erotic thrillers of just being total sex. It just gives you a taste. I don't know. You know, it's one of those things. It's almost a genre mashup to me. It's a very odd film, but definitely something to see.
The version I have is a U.S. release. It was domestic. The body double one that I have is the Umbrella.
Oh, okay. Wait, so Dress to Kill was released on Blu-ray already?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, it got a new transfer apparently, and there's
this is the 4K Brian De Palma one. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've owned the old Blu-ray here. I just own the Criterion one.
People are saying there's some color issues.
Well, that's what I was saying about between the cinematographer. I wonder, because I think he's on the Arrow release. I don't know if. Is maybe De Palma didn't approve the UK one. I don't know. It's something to look into.
Yeah, it's still a good movie.
Next up, I watched basically all the Craven movies this past couple weeks since our talk. Yeah, so I finally got around to a film I was never a huge fan of, but I watched Shocker again. Not the biggest fan of Shocker. This is the Scream Factory release. Not a new transfer. It's obviously an old HD master from MGM. But, great. I listened to the commentary. It was just a fun little commentary with Wes Craven. I don't remember this being – what? Is everybody there?
Yeah.
Oh.
Did we lose Sean?
No, he's muting his mic.
Oh.
Something happened with the kids. So I'll just keep going. Are you a fan of Shocker at all? Because this is kind of a big hit or miss for people. Like, people either really, really like it, or they're like me, and they're like, eh.
What's weird is that as far as the film and the story is concerned, I love Shocker. Like, I think that it's really kind of unintentionally brilliant. My problem is that I fucking hate Peter Berg. Oh my god, do I hate him. I think he is just terrible to watch. He's just the worst. And in this movie in particular, he just drives me up the wall. And I don't know... It's like how I feel about watching Colin Farrell. Yeah, it's like how I feel whenever I watch Colin Farrell. I'm just like, oh, I hate this already. Like, it doesn't matter how good anything is. Like, they just ruin it. And I think that if Peter Berg was not in it, I would like Shocker a lot more than I do. But I do like it. I think that it's pretty... It's fun. I don't know. I have fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mind it as much.
Peter Berg's just terrible.
Yeah, I didn't mind it much as the second time around, or this is probably my third, because I watched it, I don't know, about a year, year and a half ago, and it was just a little underwhelming, because I thought I remembered to like a lot more. It's just a bland, I think it's because it's too fucking long.
Yes, it is very long.
For a story like this, this is a fucking two-hour movie, and it's just like keeps going and keeps going, and you know, one thing I always got this confused, the last horror show. I don't know. It's always kind of – because they have kind of the same premise, right? Because I haven't seen the last horror show.
I don't think I've seen that one
similar.
Ever.
We talked about – we
Yeah, that's the House three thing, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Then yes, I have. Sorry.
Yeah. So, anyways, yeah, I mean, definitely something. If you're a fan of Shocker, pick it up on Blu-ray. If not, you could probably stick with the MGM DVD because MGM always release decent DVDs. They kind of look HD anyway. But yeah, it's not much better than DVD.
Are the special features genuinely worth it though? Like you said, you had fun with them. So like,
they're
worth it.
The Wes Craven, because I skipped around, but I think it's an old commentary from the DVD. Okay. There's some new interviews and stuff. There's kind of a short documentary about the music, which I thought was kind of cool. Goes into the more or less the music because it's kind of borderline like heavy metal, like horror in a way. Its music is way better than the film. So anyways, and moving along, because I mean, everybody knows Shocker, so I'll just stop. This is Warner Archive, and when I heard this was being released, I thought it was a joke at first, but it wasn't, obviously, because I'm holding it in my hand, and I watched it again. But Showdown in Little Tokyo. If no one has seen fucking Showdown in Little Tokyo with the amazing Brandon Lee, who just kicks so much fucking ass, just a great action film, and the chemistry between Lundgren and Lee just fucking work. Like, fireworks go off every time they're on the screen together. Just a really good buddy action movie, but it maintains this hardcore badassness. Because, like, we have buddy comedies like Lethal Weapon, which they're kind of family-oriented. Like, there's a lot of lighthearted stuff in Lethal Weapon. This one takes all the lightheartedness out of the way and just says goes full force and becomes this fucking kick-ass action movie. Like, you literally get to see a guy snap his own neck. That's pretty hardcore.
Jesus.
Like, if you've never, like, hey, you're going to interrogate me? I'm going to fucking snap my own neck so I can't talk. Like, that's pretty badass. Directed by Mark Lester, who no other than did Class of 1999.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Class of 1984, nice. Director of Commando. So, also director of Pterodactyl of Coolio, if anybody's interested. That movie does exist.
I'm interested.
The movie does exist, by the way. But anyways,
double feature that with Pterodactyl Woman.
Well, Mark Lester did these, like, really, like, weird... Like, he did a movie called White Rush with Judd Nelson. Like, he just went on this, like, weird, like, direct-to-video tangent, like probably, like, 98 and on. Just a oddball films that he would do. This is a short action movie. It's definitely one of the better ones. Lundgren's always a pleasure to see, and Lee is great. So having them together in something like this, it's a perfect blend of... you know, just badass action stars. You know, if they would have put Mark Dacascos in there too, it probably would have been better. But, you know, no big deal. next up, I don't know what to say. Toolbox Murders 2. So.
How is that?
This is the sequel to the remake, right? By,
it's a movie.
Yeah, Toby Hooper.
Yeah, Toby Hooper.
Yeah, it's...
Because the remake isn't really that good anyway, from what I hear.
The remake's not bad. Yeah. Like, they went a different direction. It's definitely better than the original, because I'm not that big of a fan of the original Toolbox Murders. The remake was actually pretty decent.
Okay.
This one, I don't even know what it is. Like, it doesn't... It feels like I watched a work print of a movie.
Mm.
Like, I downloaded something illegally... And I watched it. That's what it felt like. It's just very discombobulated. None of it really makes sense. It's so like the twists and turns in it. It doesn't feel like a complete movie. It's absolutely like it's really hard to get through. And the fact that they actually did a Kickstarter for a third one, I think is fucking hilarious. I think they only got like $50 or something crazy like that.
I was gonna ask if they met their goal.
Not even close. They wanted like $30,000 or some bullshit. But yeah, this was just I don't even know. Like, I can't say anything good about it. Like, there's absolutely nothing in this film that's redeeming, whether it's gore or the killer or, yeah, it's just an all-around awful movie. And it's surprising, because I know it was made a little while ago, and there's this kind of uncut version that's supposed to exist, but this is not the uncut version. It is fucking 95, goddamn. Yeah, I usually don't turn movies off and finish them, but I literally had to turn this off. Like, it made me so tired, I had to go to bed like at 8:30. Like, I was like, man, I'm really tired. How much longer do I have? And it's like 45 minutes. Goddamn. So I paused it and fucking went to bed like at 8:30 because it just wore me out. But anyways, yeah, I don't suggest it. Like, watch it if you want to. It'll probably be on Netflix eventually.
Yeah.
And then, Sean, you'll be happy about this. I got the Blu-ray of The Deadlands in, and I gave it another shot, and I enjoyed it a lot more.
Nice.
The second time around. So,
look at you.
Yeah, it's just, it's still, yeah, no, I enjoyed it the second time around. The fight choreography, like you said, is great. So I just wanted to say that, because I think it's just that it was really bland, which there's not a huge amount of story. Mm-hmm. I mean, the story is still bland, but how they actually get to it, and the fight sequences are definitely a high point for the film.
Yeah.
Anyways, that was on my doorstep.
Bam.
Dang. You have a pretty flooded doorstep.
Oh, you have no idea. I have like 100 other things I have to watch. So.
My doorstep was pretty quick. A lot of them were in theater, which was really nice. But I did watch for the first time. I don't know how I miss this. I think I had always thought that I had seen it, but after watching it, I had not seen it. But I watched Black Moon Rising.
Ooh, so fucking good.
Which I had never seen, and I loved it. Tommy Lee Jones being crazy badass. Linda Hamilton with terrible bangs.
Why haven't I seen this movie? What the fuck is wrong
fucking
with
John
me?
Carpenter wrote this shit, man.
Oh, right. Okay, we've talked just about this. Shit, I need to see this.
Yeah.
Yeah, for whatever reason, maybe it's because like Black Moon Rising sounds like Bad Moon Rising, or and I like convinced myself like, oh, I've totally seen that. That sounds like something I would have seen.
It's a movie about Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Shit. Yeah, so I watched that on a DVD. Really enjoyed it. Thought it was a lot of fun. I like watching cool car chase scenes and. There's
it's a great fucking car movie. Like, underrated, like, computer car bullshit.
Yeah, it's super cool. And it was nice to see, you know, a script that Carpenter wrote but didn't direct. Like, it's really interesting to see somebody else's interpretation of Carpenter's, like, his script style. And, you know, the movie's clearly trying to, like, I don't want to say, like, profit off of him. But, like, the music is very Carpenter-esque.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's very not. I really liked it.
I think that's with a lot of the films that he writes and doesn't direct. I mean, the same thing with, like, Eyes of Laura Mars. And he did this Western called El Diablo that I think Tommy Lee Wallace directed. And, like, it's just, it feels like, still feels like a Carpenter film. So it's, like, I don't know if it's, you know, that transmits through his writing style or if he's, like, on set, like, helping out. I'm curious how that all panned out.
Or everyone's like, sorry, there's a train going by. Or, you know, possibly somebody's like, holy shit, I'm directing a John Carpenter script. Let's pay homage to him, even though he's already here. I don't know. So that one was fun. And then I saw three movies in the theater this week, which was really nice. The first one is not horror, but I highly suggest everyone go see it. I saw Dope. And it kicks ass. It is so cool and fun. It's produced by, like, Pharrell and P. Diddy, and Forest Whitaker is the narrator. But it's basically about this kid growing up in Inglewood, California, and he's, like, super obsessed with 90s hip-hop, and he dresses like it's, like, that he's in, like, a 90s hip-hop video, even though it's very much set in like 2015. And he's, you know, this good kid just trying to keep his head up, get out of the hood, move on to bigger and better things. And then he gets like caught up in between a drug deal by accident. It's really funny. The soundtrack is completely fucking kick ass. And it utilizes technology, which I'm really fascinated by the trend of how people are incorporating technology into cinema, because it's, as much as we want to fight it, it is becoming a mode of it is a major mode of communication, and you can't pretend that it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. Like, there are scenes where they're doing like a montage, but the montage is shown in like different Snapchat windows, which I thought was really fucking cool and clever, because, you know, like Snapchat, it disappears the second it's over. So you're watching these different screens, and then like occasionally they'll just disappear because, you know, the timer on it ran out. I was like, that's really smart. I liked that a lot. But it's a lot of fun. I would highly recommend checking that out. And then the two that I saw that are like horror genre films, the first one, I saw Turbo Kid.
Ooh, yeah. What a fun.
I had a fucking blast. I was cackling at the top of my lungs like an idiot. Gore is very great. I love everything about it. It's totally cheeseball and a lot of fun. And what's exciting to me is that I know that like my best friend's kid watched it, and he's 10, and it's his new favorite movie. Like, he's obsessed with it.
That's
and
cool.
As much as Turbo Kid, you know, to us as adults watching it, we're like, you know, oh, they're just paying homage to everything that, you know, we know and that we grew up on. For younger kids, like, Turbo Kid is a movie that they're going to come across that's going to turn them into lifelong genre fans, because it is what I would call a transitionary horror film. It's got over-the-top gore without it being, you know, too kind of devastatingly realistic. It's very Tom and Jerry in its gore, which I think is a lot easier for younger kids to stomach, because they know watching it, like, that's impossible. That would never happen. So it helps them understand, like, oh, it's just a movie. But at the same time, it's also just like, it's super fun and super funny. So I think that it's a great transitionary horror film if you're trying to, you know, because it's not really a horror film, but you know what I mean? Like, it's a great transitionary film if you're trying to bridge the gap between like children's movies and adult movies. Like, this is a great middle ground, and it's got plenty of stuff in it. Yeah. And it's got plenty of stuff in it that, you know, they'll understand, because right now, if you really think about it, the only transitionary like films like that really exist are films like Monster Squad or Night of the Creeps or Gremlins. And those are 30 something years old, and as great as they are, kids today need something fresher and newer because they don't have the patience for it anymore. And I think Turbo Kid is going to fall in line with that, which I really like. I think that it's a lot of fun.
It's free. If you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it for free. Also,
yes. I suggest you do it. It's fun. I loved it
as well. My only issue with the film, and like I truly loved it. I thought it was great. It's just like, I just wish there was a little, like, it's so anticlimactic.
Yes, it could have had a bigger boss fight, as I'd like to call it.
Yeah.
But the more I was thinking about it, you know, Michael Ironside is, you know, the big bad villain. He's a lot older than I think we think he is. I don't know. Like, I was watching it, and I was like, what? You're not delivering, Michael Ironside. Like, I know you can be bigger and badder than this. And then I was thinking about it. I was like, oh, wait, you're old as shit. Like, you're probably exhausted, and this took every ounce of energy that you had. I can't be mad now.
He's like 65, I think.
Yeah, but like, Danny Trejo's like, what, 74, and he's still fucking riding bikes in the air and shit?
Well, Danny Trejo is also like his own fucking species. Like, he's not even a real person.
Like, it's like, fucking crazy. Like, that's not a joke. That's not an exaggeration. He's like literally fucking 74 years old.
Yeah, and just killing it. Whereas
crazy.
Like, but he's also like still in like great shape and whatever. Like, Michael Ironside is pretty much a walrus. Like, I'm surprised he's moving on his own.
Yeah.
So yeah, but no, Turbo Kid is
it's fun. it's a ton of fun. It was a little. It's the thing is that after I watched it, it was like, you know, because I saw it at South by Southwest. It was you know, I had a lot of fun, but it was just like after it sat with me, I was like, I was kind of just depressed because when I was trying to talk about it, all I could say was the things that you said. But it was like there's literally kind of no story to it. It's just.
Right. There's a lot of random things that happen that don't make any sense.
Yeah, it's just a small
event. Yeah, like there's a bunch of stuff that really doesn't make sense. But at the same time, the more I think about it, like there's so many movies that I love like that where there's stuff that's not really explained.
But it's fine. Like, you don't need a huge fucking story for everything.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Like, it's okay for something to be low key.
And Apple is the fucking best. She is so great. Yeah, she's adorable, number one. But number two, I love her characterization in that she's, you know, essentially the love interest, our eye candy. But nothing about her responses to this are anti-feminist, I guess is the way to put it. Like, she definitely exists for, you know, our male protagonist to have something to fight for, but she very much fights on her own, and anything that she does that's, you know, romantic in response, like, I don't want to spoil anything, but, like, when you watch it, you're like, oh, she's not doing this because she's poorly written, she's doing this because this is what she has to do. Like, that's really, really cool to me. I liked her a lot. I really liked her. She's fun. She steals the whole movie for me. But yeah, watch Turbo Kid.
Which I also wanted to. Sorry, I just wanted to interject that.
Oh no, you're fine.
For I know that.
I hate you.
But it's really fun is to go back and watch the short, because this was originally an ABCs of Death short that didn't make it.
Huh.
And it was T for Turbo.
Wow.
And it's a fucking ton of fun.
Yeah, the short's really, really awesome. I still don't know how that one didn't win, but that's...
Yeah, T for Toilet did.
I know. Oh, I think it was like, oh, it's claymation. They tried really hard. Fuck off. It's not that good.
I hate T for Toilet.
Yeah. Anyway. And then the last thing I saw is... and I'm mentioning it because if you're friends with me on Facebook, you already saw the story. If you're not friends with me on Facebook, I'm sharing it with you all now because it's fucking great. I saw Sinister 2. I don't understand the hate that it's getting. It's not I'm not trying to say, like, oh, this is fucking great and super scary. Like, and it's pretty paint by numbers, but I commend anybody who uses fire, water, and children in one movie. Like, that's three of the worst possible things that you can put in your movie to make everything shitty. And they did it, and I felt they did it pretty well. One of the child actors is fucking terrifying, and I loved him, and I want him in a million other movies. If you're gonna remake Children of the Corn, fucking steal this kid as Isaac immediately. I don't know his name, but he was great. But yeah, the kill tapes, because it's Sinister, so they have the kill tapes, are a little bit, they're so elaborate that it's kind of unbelievable that, like, the children would be doing these, but they're really gruesome, and that was fun. I liked that. But in my screening of Sinister 2, I was in the theater with an older gentleman, and then there was a couple in their 50s that were, like, two rows behind me. And the couple that was behind me, they were talking during the previews, and the husband said, you know, why did we pick this movie again? And the wife's like, oh, well, the first one is lit really, really dark, which means the theater's going to be dark. No one will know. And I was like, that's a peculiar thing to say before a movie starts. But I'm just going to eat my popcorn with the Reese's Pieces poured on it and not pay attention to that. So as the movie goes on, I started hearing some noises. And I was like, that's uncomfortable. But you know what? I'm never going to knock someone else's kink. Whatever. And then it got louder and louder and louder. And finally,
they were having sex?
They weren't having sex, but they were playing the, I think I called it the no pants hands dance.
Mm.
Are you talking about, like, hot and heavy moaning and stuff?
Oh, yeah. They were mutually, like, he was finger blasting her and she was jerking him off in the back of the theater. And, like, they probably could have gotten away with it if he had not been so loud about it. Like, the wife, either he's bad at what he does, or the wife is just really good at keeping her mouth shut. Hmm. But the guy was just like, like, for no reason, which is, one, super uncomfortable, because that movie is, like, 95% children. But I took solace in the fact that I know they were not fucking watching it. They were just using the excuse, like, they knew the theater was going to be dark. And in their defense, they were correct, because I almost sat on them when I came in during the previews, because it was so goddamn dark, because the only previews were horror movie previews, which are always really fucking dark, that I didn't see them at first. So, I mean, I guess they were right in that regard. But as that was going on, the other guy who was in the theater with us got up and was like, fuck this shit, and went and got an usher, and an usher escorted them out. And then I finished my movie. But, yeah, people were totally giving each other handy J's.
Yeah.
Two rows behind me in the theater. And that's so creepy on so many levels. But it made for an excellent movie-watching experience. Oh, my God.
What's even creepier is that I'm doing something right now.
Oh, dear God.
Story's gross. Hot. Gross.
Story's so hot.
But what's funny is that I was telling everybody what had happened, and they're like, oh, were they like college kids or like some like young teenagers, blah, blah, blah. I was like, no, they're like my parents' age. They're like at least in their 50s.
Good for them.
Well, yeah. Their
right.
Their relationship's
like,
stable, like, apparently. I mean,
exactly.
You know,
that's why, or it's a mistress. Who fucking knows?
Yeah, it very well could be.
Like, because in my head, I was like, you have a house and a car and other, like, why are you fucking in the theater?
Do you want
to
go to Sinister 2 and fuck?
Sure.
It's the, it's the excitement. They need to look at, you know, it's boring.
Like,
yeah,
nothing makes my dick harder than Blumhouse rich white people problem movies.
Yes.
So, yeah, but that was my experience. And I just, like, walked out of the theater and is like, I'm not going to ever hate on someone else's kink. Like, I fucking get it. Like, I get the idea. It's the exhibition. It's the danger of getting caught. Like, I understand
and
it.
They got caught.
But it was like, dude, just shut up. Like, don't be so loud and obvious about it.
That.
But, like, I left the theater, and it was like, it finally happened. Like, and all the years of movie going, it finally happened. Someone was doing the dirt in the theater.
Nice.
Brilliant. So, yep, that was my movie watching experience. That's what was on my doorstep. What do you have, Sean?
I remember I had a Cruel Intentions experience back
in
college.
Oh, that's right.
Years. No, I mean, we got Dana Nasty and Cruel Intentions in the back row.
See, but that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
That makes complete sense to me.
Anyway, moving along. But you got to be quiet. You got to keep that on the DL.
See, and that's the thing. Like, I'm not going to talk out of school and talk about the things that I have done in theaters. But keep your goddamn mouth shut. And
yeah,
if you can't keep your goddamn mouth shut, have them put their hand over your mouth. Like, come on.
Have
what
some
is
sort of contingency plan.
Yeah, it's fucking amateurs. Anyway.
All right.
What'd you watch this week?
I watched Best Buy has been doing this awesome thing where if you pre-order one of their special steelbooks, you get the movie like weeks in advance on Vudu, which is fantastic. Or actually, it's Cine something, one of the other movie sites, but it's Ultraviolet, so it transfers over to my Vudu, whatever, login. But I watched Furious 7. I know that's not a horror movie or anything, but let's just say, after The Rock and Jason Statham, their awesome fight scene, you might as well just, like, bang hunks of meat together, you know, and just toss it on your, you know, barbecue and watch it burn. But,
wow. This is the best review I've ever read.
I had a blast with it, though, anyway. But after it loses steam, definitely after that Rock/Jason Statham fight, which is just balls to the wall, insanity, and great. Anyway, and everyone in the movie somehow inherited Wolverine's power of regeneration. Because there's a scene where Jason Statham and Vin Diesel are aiming their cars right at each other. And full blast run into each other, and they both walk out of the crash and just kind of adjust their bones and fight. So stuff like that. It's total superhero stuff, but I think it's my least favorite of the last three, but anyway.
Yeah, I thought it was very, 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 very underwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah, but. I mean, I'm a fan of the series. I mean, the only thing I don't like is the third one, which I always get shit for it because that's like everybody's favorite. I know, whatever.
No. It's right. Not.
It's okay.
But, you know, I just, it was just like I understand the reason why, because obviously there was some serious production problems right. Because of everything that happened. But it just felt like that oozed on the screen.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the depressing part. It just didn't feel – it felt like we were watching the Toolbox Murders 2 where it's just kind of like incomplete.
Yeah. And, yeah, definitely
but there
incomplete.
Were some really – like the ending was super sentimental and totally. I love that.
Yes.
Because the whole –
got a little misty for me.
Yeah, without like – I'm not going to spoil anything. So – no spoiler alerts or anything like that, but like the film portrays this hardcore thing of family. It always has. And it got really heavy in the last like three. And it was kind of the first time watching just a movie where you're part of the movie for a second, because yeah. It says, you know what? This isn't the movie anymore. This is kind of like our goodbye.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really sweet because it didn't like, you know, do some kind of fucking leading up to part 8 or something fucking crazy. It was like, you know, we're kind of done with the story right now. And now this is our thing for Paul. And I thought that was really sweet. So, yeah. But anyways, I mean, I want to watch it again. It was just like,
it is a fun time. It's just a dumb action
flick.
There's
an action sequence that's like, oh, you know what? We got to go to fucking India and drive these cars through these buildings, and then we're going to fucking leave.
Yeah, they are bouncing from
continent to continent. Wait, why are we in India for a second, and then we're back in the U.S.? Like, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Because why the fuck not?
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, there's fun to be had, but see it at least for that fight between The Rock and Jason Statham, because that thing is friggin' hardcore. It's probably one of my favorite fight scenes in a long time. Moving along, though. I'm finally going through my Escape from the Bronx kind of trilogy. So I finally got to Escape from the Bronx, the second movie in that those films. And I had a lot of fun with it. It's not as good as the first one. I'm having a brain blank on the first one. Bronx Warriors. But that's the first one, right? Right, Bronx Warriors.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't think the story was as fun as the first one, but it does have its moments. And Mark Gregory must have had a walking coach because he doesn't swish his hips as much in this one. He's trying to act a little more badass. But the thing I liked about this flick is like the bouts of violence that it had. Like the Italians have something with how they portray like violence and in these films, especially in the '80s, and I just love those scenes a lot. So it was fun. It was all right. I'm excited to catch the last one now. Where is it at? I'm looking through my the New Barbarians. Fun.
Yeah, so. New Barbarians is probably one of the better ones.
Cool. Yeah, but it's fun. I mean, Blue Underground. You know, they're it's amazing. These look as good as they do. This one doesn't look as good as the first one. They must have had some more problematic elements for this one, but. But, you know, it is a lot of fun. So, moving along from that, we've already talked enough about those movies. I caught for the first time since I was a kid, Sword and the Sorcerer. Now, this is one that's on it's on a Anchor Bay DVD that is insanely pricey. So, unfortunately, you can't just go out and buy it. But I did catch this 1982 flick by Albert Pym. It's been forever since I've seen this.
Sorry.
And it's not as good as I remember. It's not as epic as that poster is, of course. With the man in the loincloth defending the woman from the sorcerer and the snake coming out between the woman's legs. But aside from that, it was pretty fun to check out. It makes me really.
Is this a live action movie?
Yeah, Sword and the Sorcerer. I mean, it did a huge numbers.
I've never seen it.
Oh man, you haven't.
Sword in the Stone is the animated
Sword
film.
Right. Sword and the Sorcerer. I mean, I remember this came out. I think it came out to capitalize on Conan the Barbarian, and it was it did huge numbers. It made a lot of money. It was really popular. I remember when it was in the theater, then everyone that I knew had it on VHS. But this one, like, the Anchor Bay DVD came out and then went out of print, and then it's been insanely hard to find ever since, which has been super frustrating, because I think this one would be a lot of fun to at least get re-released on DVD or get a Blu-ray. But I think I contacted Albert Pune about it once, and he said he doesn't have anything to do with the rights, of course, since he was just the director.
I was going
to
ask who has the rights.
I don't know exactly. It's stuck with somebody. I talked to – who did I talk to? I talked to somebody else on Twitter. They said – I guess that the people who have the rights are asking an insane amount of asking for an insane amount of money, and no company yet has bit at that amount.
Do you think they're doing the insane amount of money because they're greedy, or because they know that it's an insane amount and that nobody will go for the rights?
I don't know. I mean, it's unfortunate because this is just, you know, it's a sword and sandal fantasy, cheesy 80s adventure. I mean, it's super cheesy, but I think it's one of my favorite Albert Pune movies for sure. And it's definitely they're ripping off Conan in a lot of ways, but I mean, come on, he has like a three-pronged sword that shoots out.
Wow, there's a
blades.
Sequel to this shit.
The sequel's awful. Sequel's horrible.
Kevin Sorbo.
Yeah.
Kevin Sorbo, Val Kilmer, and Michael Paré. Sign me
up. That sounds...
It's absolutely horrible,
like,
apparently.
Sign
the
me
worst
up.
That but, everything about that sentence makes me just want to never watch movies.
But this thing...
Sign me up.
This thing needs to be restored on Blu-ray. I mean, I swear, every one of my friends, whenever I'd go to their house, they had a huge clamshell VHS of The Sword and the Sorcerer always sitting by the TV. And this thing, at least in my circles, was viewed as pretty popular. But check it out if you have access to any means of seeing it. I believe it's on this thing called YouTube right now. You can find it there. But otherwise, track down a VHS.
I don't know what the YouTubes are.
It's all out there on the YouTubes. All right, moving along. Finally, I finally watched Harbinger Down. And this was
I'm sorry.
This was a film that was kickstarted 2 years ago. About 2 years ago, I plunked down $40 for a limited edition. This is what they said: limited edition, 2-disc Blu-ray, with the movie and a bunch of exclusive special features and a feature-length documentary on the making of the film.
Did you get all of those things?
I have not gotten any of that yet. I had to rent this from Vudu just to watch the fucking thing. Because I was curious. I mean, I was like, it's out on DVD, for Christ's sake, and freaking Best Buy. So, but I was like, well, I want to see the HD version, so I rented it for like $6. So now we're on, I've paid $46 just for Harbinger Down. And then this week, we're getting emails. They're not going to release a special edition disc with the documentaries. They're releasing them as downloads, which is annoying as hell.
That's super annoying.
So I'm not getting that limited edition. I'm going to get the Blu-ray that is specially created for this, and that's it. They're not going to include all special features on the Blu-ray. They're downloadable. But then on Twitter, they just responded to me because I was bitching about it on Twitter, which is, of course, you do. And I tagged them.
You even tagged them? That's some next level shit.
Yeah, people who request it will get a DVD of the special features. Apparently.
So you have to be, like, in the secret club and harass them on social media to get the disc, is what you're saying.
Apparently. Or just download them and burn the shit yourself. But which I definitely could do. It's just annoying. You know, this movie's been out. And to add insult to injury, the movie is shit. It's not good at all. The plot is a thing, is, you know, it's a ripoff of The Thing, but on, like, a ship in the middle of nowhere. I'm not necessarily sure the rules of the creature. You touch it, or it splatters on you, and then you just explode, like what happens in Contamination.
Yep.
Which Contamination does a better job, actually.
That's saying something.
The effects just aren't that good. Like, this has been marketed as a practical effects movie. We're going to kick ass. It's going to be, we worked on The Thing remake. Our effects got digitally painted over. all this stuff. So they're already promising a whole lot of, at least decent effects was what I was hoping for. But it's like, decent effects aren't like paper mache looking tentacles just shaking around in front of the camera. It's like, that's pretty much what we got. And then the creature designs just, it's like they just took all the extra stuff that they used on the thing that didn't get filmed, brought it to set, and, made it work for
the
movie.
That's probably exactly what they did. And the thing, because I've just been hearing nothing about
how
shitty it is.
It's super
frustrating. Yeah, so I rented it, I watched it. The only reason I didn't talk about it was because I try not to shit on, like, people that are really trying to do something independently.
Right, and that's why it's hard for me. Just, like, frustrating for me, too.
Right, yeah, it's super frustrating. But for me, filmmaking is a collaborative effort. And when you try to wear too many hats, things can be a problem.
Yeah.
Like, there is a reason that, like, I write films and I act in them, but I do not edit them because I am not an editor. And if I try that, it'll look like shit. So, I mean, kudos to these people who are like, hey, our shit got fucked up from the thing. We're going to make a movie. But just because you can make super cool effects doesn't necessarily mean you know how to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where it gets kind of frustrating for me, is because I've seen the stuff that they made for the thing that got, painted over and whatever. And it is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's super awesome. Like, they clearly are talented people. But just because you're talented in one aspect of filmmaking doesn't mean that you know how to make a film. There are so many different moving parts, and, like, you have to get the best people that you can to fill those roles. You can't just assume, oh, well, I can do it. Like, no, it's not how it works. So that's why it's frustrating to me, is because it could have been so much better.
Totally.
Had they just been like, you know what, we're really, really, really good at effects. We really want to do this. We need someone else to write a script. Like, that would have...
Yeah, or to direct the thing, because I think the effects could have looked good if they were lit right, if they're shot right, if they were framed right, edited
exactly.
right. It could have
exactly.
looked good. It's just frustrating. Because, like, I paid $40 for this 2 years ago, haven't seen anything from it. I had to rent it myself. And, and it just wasn't even enjoyable. Like, I can find some enjoyment in some pretty dumb shit. We all know that. But for this one, it was just frustrating. I think maybe 2 years leading up to this kind of, and it had a kick-ass trailer, and, you just felt, and their heart's in the right place. You really know that the filmmakers are really excited and passionate about what they do. It just, the final product just wasn't that good. So once I get my package, I'll be said and done with it. And it's frustrating kickstarting a film, because it really, you'd never know what the final product's going to be. You're kind of really putting yourself out on a limb as a financier of the film in a small piece, but you're not getting any sort of, anything other than, like, you're pre-ordering a movie before it's even in existence,
Yep.
So, anyway, it's a harmony.
It's a risk, and you took the risk.
Yeah, I took the risk, man. I wanted to support filmmaking. I wanted to support practical effects, and, that's the thing. I talk a lot about practical effects.
Regardless if Harbinger Down is kind of shitty, you did your part, and you put your money where your mouth is.
Well,
lot more than what most people can say.
I just want to receive the freaking Blu-ray and the special features, and then I can close this saga and close this down.
Speaking of, I don't know if either of you donated to the popcorn Kickstarter years and years ago.
Yeah, y'all are fucked.
No. Here's fun fact.
We finally getting something?
Yeah. I guess... Synapse is looking for all of the names of the people who donated to guarantee that they will be receiving their copies.
Nice.
And that's not a joke. Like, that's a real thing.
Yeah, no, so, they announced that. Who did we have on the show to talk about that?
Gosh, I don't even remember.
Yeah, they brought that up, which is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, there was, because I liked the popcorn, fan page for that a while ago and completely forgot about it. And then I saw a post today, I don't know if, Don or somebody posted it, or if it was Christy, I don't know. But it was like, hey, if you paid money for the Kickstarter, email this person. And I was like, oh, shit. Okay, cool.
Wow.
So, If you did, go find that page, or I'll find the link. I'll send it to you. Word on the street, it's happening. It's going through. So
yeah, this is one that they've been really frustrated with. Don, I know Don's really been trying to gather everything together for this and put out a really good release. And I think this is one that's posed a lot of problems with the transferred stuff, I believe, right?
Amongst other things talk about,
yeah,
but
right,
yes.
Right. A lot of stuff. This thing was a crazy deal. All right, yep. Moving along. BJ, are you going to stick around, or are you going to...
Dude, I really want to talk about student bodies, and then I'm going to fucking die.
Okay.
Like, I am...
All right, let's talk.
I'm on new meds, and I am just like, woo, hey. Okay.
Nice. We'll jump into that.
Hashtag cancer is awful. Ugh. Go on.
Fuck you, cancer. All right. I'm like getting hoarse here. I haven't talked in such a long time. I'm yelling at my kids so much, I'm like, can't even talk. Today's film we are talking about is out. The Blu-ray is out on Olive Films, so it's a bare bones release, but I'm just glad that it's out. Student Bodies.
Hello? Hello?
Student Bodies.
Now,
I fucking love Student Bodies.
Around this time, this was 1981, so this was pretty fresh in the whole, like, all the slashers were coming out. Parody movies were, I think, had Airplane had come out by this time, right? Where were we at in, like, parody films at this time? Do you guys know?
Parodies?
The parody films,
Airplane,
or Naked Gun.
For sure, this is the first, like... This is the first horror, like,
right,
parody style.
Airplane was 1980,
sure.
So this was right.
Okay,
at,
so yeah, this
is
after
right
that.
At the beginning, kind of the parody. I mean, like Monty Python would do like parody-ish type things, you know. But the parody film as we know it, you know, like.
Are you sure that Saturday the 14th didn't come out before this? Because I think that was like a year before.
It could have been. It was all like around the same time.
But yeah, Saturday the 14th, I think, was the very first.
Well, they were both 1981.
Well, that movie is nowhere near as
good. Oh, no, Saturday the 14th is fucking terrible.
Yeah, so I think that's why Student Bodies kind of cemented it as kind of the formula that is still being used.
Yeah, I had always wanted to watch Student Bodies. I think I had it. It was not on some DVD, like combo pack of some sort, right? I might
Blu-ray.
Even. No, before the Blu-ray. It was out.
No.
No?
Oh. Well, I mean, it was on Blu-ray.
I'm thinking of
already.
Something else.
Yeah, it was paired with Jekyll and Hyde Together Again or something.
Huh, okay.
But yeah, it's
a weird double feature.
Yeah, it's weird that there was... I mean, I guess all of got they did that with Monster Squad as well.
Yeah.
They re-released Monster Squad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's definitely one of their... It's one of their better transfers, I will say that.
Oh, I thought it looked great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with this. Like, this is my first time seeing it. And, I mean, the only other horror parody that I had seen was Scary Movie. You know, Scary Movie, gosh, maybe 1 and 2, I think. I don't even know. But
what you know about Shriek if you know what I did last Friday the 13th?
God, see, fuck that.
Yeah.
I fucking... love horror parodies. The only ones that I really can't get into, I cannot get into the Haunted House films, because they're just way too Wayans Brothers for me. But everything else and in between, like, I don't give a shit how bad it is. Like, I love it. I think it's fucking hilarious. And they're really good time capsules of the dumb shit that is popular. Like, if you go back and watch some of these, you're like, what are they even referencing? Like, I don't even fucking know.
Well, like, Student Bodies had a few things to kind of reference from, but it wasn't, like, it's interesting watching this now because we have such a wide array of slasher films, you know, to really make fun of or that have really, you know, seeped into the culture and everything. But, I was surprised, like, I imagine this plays better now than it did when it initially came out. I know that it got some horrible reviews when it came out theatrically in 1981. I found it, like, pretty smart. It was dumb, but in a good way, like a dumb funny, especially when she gets the babysitter who's, if you notice, isn't really watching any kids, gets a phone call, and that phone call sequence is just hysterical. But it gets kind of dumb from there, but I had a blast with it. When did you guys first see it? I mean, Brad probably saw this when he was two, but.
No, it wasn't two. I think I saw it on the back in the VHS days. Yeah. I thought it was fucking hysterical. I was always a big fan of horror parodies from the 80s because I always, aside from Saturday the 14th and Saturday the 14th Strikes Back, but I mean, like, Encounters of the Spooky Kind, fucking, you know, Pandemonium, Hysterical, not Pandemonium, it's Hysterical. There's actually a movie called Hysterical. There was quite a bit. Like, I think this is kind of what sparked, you know, Saturday the 14th and Student Bodies sparked a lot of these horror parodies.
But Saturday the 14th came out Halloween of 1981. Student Bodies came out August of 1981. Mm. Boom.
Ooh.
Hashtag
in your face. Hashtag research. You fucking Googled that shit. I saw it, you know, VHS days, and I loved it ever since because, I mean, I was really into slashers and, you know, just seeing kind of a spoof on it. And it's legitimately funny.
Yeah.
There's a lot of just really just silly, funny, stupid things that happen. But it doesn't, like, lose your interest. It just keeps going. Like, that's one thing I do enjoy about it, other than the other films. Like, they hit heavy at first because they have the right thing going. And then it's like, oh, wait, we have to make this movie an hour and a half. So let's, like, kind of neglect being funny for 30 minutes. And those movies always lose you. Student Bodies never did that. It just keeps going and going and going. Like, they knew exactly what they wanted. But I always heard there was a lot of problems with the film. I was hoping for, like, a documentary or something for this film. But, yeah, there was an Alan Smithy event. They had a director that dropped out. So I'm kind of, you know, it had some production development hell and production hell during the filming. So it's kind of weird to see it come out as good as it did for me. I don't know how other people feel about it. But it was always kind of a high point for me. I always thoroughly enjoyed this film.
I saw it in college. We were discussing Bertolt Brecht in a theater class and, like, the Brechtian style of theater of, like, breaking the fourth wall, and, like, Brecht would, you know, hold up signs to, like, distract people in the middle of a play to remind them, like, hey, you're watching a play kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there was a list of films recommended by one of my professors of films that use Brechtian elements, and Student Bodies was one of them, in reference to the whole, like the superimposed body count, which is so fucking funny. Or the, you know, we want the R rating, fuck you.
Like, that was scene.
Oh God, it's so fantastic. Good. It's so good. So, you know, I was immersed in, like, all this stupid, like, theater theory and watching all these, like, Brechtian films. Like Funny Games is one of them when he, you know, addresses the camera. Huh. That's a very Brechtian thing to do. Mm-hmm. To, like, be like, hey, you're learning something.
JCVD does that.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like looking at this list. I was like, student body is like, I don't even know what that is. And I tracked it down at a VHS like database at one of the libraries in town. And they just had like a bunch of old VHS tapes, and that was one of them. And I watched it, and I was fucking dying. I was like, this is so funny. I have no idea how this went under my radar because it's goddamn brilliant. But yeah, it's like the little stuff like that. You know, when people do it now, sometimes it feels kind of hokey, and I don't know. But it, like for student bodies, it just works. But yeah, the we want our R rating scene, and like, oh god, it kills me. It reminds me a lot of like Joe Lynch's cameo in Chillerama when he's the director talking about the movie that makes everyone poop themselves. Like those two scenes, I think that they have a lot in common. So it made me appreciate that part of Chillerama a little bit more. Was the student body scene.
I want to know what happened to who played that Malvert, the janitor, that really
he died.
The stick. Guy, did he? The stick.
Oh, he's a comedian. Okay. He died.
Yeah, oh, he is. He's notorious for, you know, his physical comedy skills. Like in the world of contortionism, he's a fucking legend. But
he was only in this movie.
That movie. Like you can find videos of him doing like his act and whatever, but okay. As far as like actual like movies, yeah, that's it.
Oh,
but that's that's the stick, as he is so elegantly referred to as.
You know, what's funny is that, you know, because I mentioned Alan Smithy, the Alan Smithy guy is actually Michael Ritchie, who did, you know, like Fletch, you know, the Fletch films. Oh, okay. He did, shit. Well, that movie with Eddie Murphy, the golden Child.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, he did Bad News Bears. So like he's very, very familiar with, you know, getting people to laugh because those movies are fucking hilarious. So it's kind of weird for him to drop out and want his name taken off. And this movie still like is legitimately funny. And obviously he had a lot to do with that. So I'm just really pissed off that we didn't win it. Because when I heard all of us, it was coming out on Blu-ray additionally. At first, I was like, oh shit, like, that's going to be great. Hopefully, they put some special features on there and actually talk about what really happened. But then I heard it was Olive, and I was like, shit. But, you know, just a all around just odd thing happening with the film of him dropping out and it still being just as good. Because, I mean, usually whenever you see Alan Smithy, the film kind of blows. You know, that's usually the tradition. So, you know, just having, you know, Michael Ritchie drop out as a producer and a director, yeah, and then somebody else taking over. Who knows when they actually took over? I mean, it could have been, you know, at the very end, but just a really funny fucking movie.
Yeah, like
The Breather.
So stupid. It's so great. It's like the movie gets like a lot of shit. Like I've tried to look up reviews, and the reviews that came up were like two. Like one, it's on a list of like the worst horror movies of all time, or something like that. And then Horror Movie A Day. He had watched it, and he didn't really like it either. But it was like the thing that I tried to find about it was like, you know, but I had a blast with it, man. Like, I, you know, it's a dumb spoof film. I mean, it's right up there with, like, it's like the horror version of, like, what Airplane is. Like, Airplane is one of my favorite spoof comedies of all time, you know, and this, you know, I would rank it right up there in the horror genre as the best spoof that I've seen. I mean, it's way better than Scary Movie. I mean, Scary Movie, it was fun when that first came out, but I think this, like, Student Bodies has, I feel like the writer kind of knew what he was doing. Like, he knew the jokes to make, and of course he's riffing on
most. He made a timeless horror comedy, Scary Movie.
Right, right.
Focuses on pop culture.
Right, yeah. Right. That's the big difference. Like, watching it now, I feel like it's actually aged pretty damn well.
Yeah. Well, you know? I mean, Student Bodies isn't pick. I mean, obviously, there's certain things that, you know, they pull from, but Student Bodies is timeless because they're making fun of a genre in a whole. They're not, you know, Scary Movie picks on Scream, so you have to watch Scream in order to laugh at Scary Movie. Mm-hmm. You can go in, never,
yes.
You can basically watch Student Bodies without ever seeing a horror film and still get it.
Yeah, it's just,
you
it's
know,
a comedy.
That's the big difference. Yeah. That's the big difference between those two films.
And correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay, I will.
Richard Belzer's the breather, isn't he?
I don't know.
I'm almost positive. Like, there was... I want to say there's an article from the AV Club where they do, like, random roles or whatever, and they interview an actor. I am almost fucking positive, like, Richard Belzer is the breather, like, and it's one of his first things. I have to look this up now.
Well, yeah, IMDb credits Jerry Belson.
No, correct her if you're wrong.
But that's IMDb.
Richard... IMDb doesn't know shit. Richard Belzer,
writer, producer,
Student Bodies.
He died in 2006.
Yep. Random roles with the AV Club. It says Richard Belzer and da-da-da-da-da. Let's look up. Let's. Student Bodies, The Breather. Richard Belzer.
Yeah.
I forgot doing that, frankly. I don't deny it. I've
Richard
heard it,
Belzer.
And it certainly... It certainly is my voice on the phone. I swear I don't remember doing that. Was that from the 70s? Said it was a comedy version of a slasher film. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember doing that. I must have been highly medicated.
I wonder if they had a different actor, but he came in and did the voiceover.
I think he did the voice.
Oh, okay.
That's all
here,
he did. Is
that's
he's
on
just
this
the
on
the
website. Michael Ritchie produced and directed the film. So there you go. But because it was filmed during a strike... He had to use Alan Smithy instead, so he never left.
Oh.
He was a full part of it. Mickey Rose was given writing and directing credit, but actually co-wrote and co-directed with him.
Huh.
But actually, The Breather is the head writer, but couldn't get credit because of union rules.
Wow.
But
see, we need a fucking documentary on this movie.
Yeah,
but is he the actual, like, is he just the body or is he the voice? Because from what that article that I just read looks like, it sounds like Richard Belzer just did the voice for it. He wasn't actually in it. Very similarly to the way, like, the guy who voices, you know, the...
Well, I highly doubt the guy that's playing the breather is actually talking as well. Because that would,
right.
would be ADR
yeah,
all
that
the way.
Wouldn't, yeah, that wouldn't make any goddamn sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So... Yeah, somebody make a fucking documentary about
sick.
This.
I'm on it. I need to do it, because this is definitely one
you
of
gotta
my favorites.
You got to do this, you know how there's that that Friday the 13th documentary getting re-released, and then the Nightmare on Elm Street documentary? We need to do one for Student Bodies.
I think that it needs to be in horror comedies in general.
I think so.
Because, I mean, it's definitely, you know, just kind of how they... You know, you have your parodies like this, and then you have your strict parodies that are making fun of certain films, or they take the premise of something like, you know, Scary Movie. I think
I think what's interesting is how many horror parodies there are that are actually kind of successful, whereas any other genre, like the disaster movie or epic movie or Meet the Spartans or any of that, they all fucking... just flop in and get destroyed. Granted, they're all fucking terrible, but why is it that there are so many horror parodies, some of which are actually worth a shit, but they just keep getting made over and over again? Like, what is it about the combination of horror films and parody that work that doesn't work with any other subgenre?
All I know is...
I don't know. Go ahead, Sean.
No, I was... gonna derail. No, I was gonna say the best horror parody in my book, top of my list, Young Frankenstein.
It is so good. And if you haven't seen the musical, you fucking should, because it's great.
Sorry, Brad, what were you gonna say?
No, I was just saying to see the transition, because, you know, at first we had kind of dark comedy, you know, stuff like The Fearless Vampire Killers and like Spider Baby, you know, Please Don't Eat My Mother. You had films like that, and then, you know, Rocky Horror Picture Show came out, which, if you take the music out of it, it's still kind of this horror comedy. And then you had, you know, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, which took, you know, kind of the 50s B style of, you know, animal attacks and, you know, certain, you know, sci-fi, you know, big bunnies and like Night of the Lepus or something crazy like that, where just fucking tomatoes.
Right.
And then we got, you know, Student Bodies. We got, you know, Saturday the 14th. We got, you know, Shock Treatment. We got those types of things. And, you know, they put them out for a couple years, and then we got serious films with undertones of comedy, you know, stuff like, you know, Gremlins and, you know, Fright Night, Return of the Living Dead's a big one, you know, fucking Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, Night of the Creeps, where we started having these serious films, but had this, like, underlying, like, comedy to it. And then in, you know, the 90s, we got into kind of gorier films with dark comedy again, you know, stuff like, you know, Return of the Living Dead 3 then did it, you know, People Under the Stairs is a big one. I mean, you know, we mentioned that in the Wes Craven show, which was one thing I didn't mention was that it actually a lot of comedy in People Under the Stairs.
Oh God, you know, it's so funny.
Like when Roach hits, you know, the man in the face with, you know, the fucking slingshot, like, it's almost like a slapstick, because he, like, grabs his head and he falls back.
It's like Buster Keaton shit.
You know? And it's like, it comes out of nowhere. But it kind of kept on trying to do, like, the, you know, the light heart, you know, stuff. And then we had, you know, late 90s, we had, like, you know, The Bride of Chucky, and, you know, Idle Hands was a big one. And I don't know, it just kind of the transition.
That movie does not get nearly enough love.
Oh, no, it's, I love Idle Hands. Fucking great. But then, you know, and then Scary Movie came out, and I think that's what kind of changed it all, because it was a big money maker. You know, Scream was one of the most successful horror films of that time. I think it still is, probably. Fucking made $100 million its opening fucking weekend or some bullshit. And then, but I think finally we're getting back into kind of the darker, serious, you know, horror films, like, you know, with your, you know, your next, All Cheerleaders Die. You know, we had, you know, Bad Milo, we had the Piranha films, we
Tucker
had the Tension
versus Evil.
And Dale. Yeah, but see, that was, you know, that one's funny because I always made the statement that what if Jason just really needed a hug in the Friday the 13th movies? Yeah. If you look at it that way, maybe he's just really angry that no one's hugging him. And it was kind of like when I saw Tucker and Dale, I was like, oh shit, that's kind of what Jason's probably doing. You know, it's just like everything that we – it's all about perspective. You know, I always thought that was funny. But, yeah, I mean, we're getting back into it. And people are starting to like it a little bit more. I mean, we have – you know, The Final Girls is coming out, which I'm super stoked for people to see.
I'm super excited for that.
Because it is the perfect fucking horror parody and just comedy. It blends the two so well together that when I very first heard about it, and it was playing South by Southwest, it was having one showing, and I was like, ooh, I don't know how good of news that is since they're only screening it once. And it was, but I was at the Paramount, and the Paramount's like, you know, fucking 1,000 seats, 1,100 seats, something like that. And I was like, holy shit. All right, so I'm definitely going to go to this. And I had a couple friends who was like, no, probably that doesn't sound too good. It sounds like it's going to be this really meta, like, you know, fucking, you know, horror comedy. And it takes everything that we're so familiar with, but takes the spin and puts it in a whole new perspective. And we're laughing at these old jokes, but they feel so fresh and new. And I think The Final Girls, and then, of course, we have Scouts vs. Zombies, which that's what I saw it as. I don't know what it's called now. It's like Zombie Survivor or Apocalypse or something.
Yeah,
shit. Really dumb title, by the way, guys. But it's actually, you know, very, very fun. I probably shouldn't be talking about that on the air, but
no, you should. Because I saw the commercial and I was the trailer and I'm not into it at all. So it's good to hear.
Dude,
that
it's so fucking funny.
It's fun. Okay,
but like,
all right,
we're getting, you know, even like What We Do in the Shadows, like that's fucking hysterical. Like we're actually getting
so good.
We're getting
so
back
good
into this, you know, this groove of taking these old, like, not old, but just kind of laughs and situations that we're very familiar with, but putting a new spin on it, and we're laughing again at old stuff, it feels like.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen The Final Girls before. I've seen Scream. I've seen Scary Movie. Like, even Scream is – the reason why it's funny is because it's self-aware.
Yeah.
You know, The Final Girls kind of does that, but it's more or less a strict comedy, and it has this, like, weird, you know, people get put into a movie, which is fucking hysterical, by the way.
But I think we almost have to have this.
Yeah, coming from somebody that despises comedy, by the way.
But I think that we almost have to have this self-aware nature, especially with mainstream films now, because there is so much media that, like, it's like when we were talking about zombie films, when we were talking about, like, how stupid it is when we're watching a zombie film in the first, like, 30 minutes is, what's happening to this? It's like, they're a goddamn zombie, just shoot them. Like, we know what it is. Like, stop. So I think you almost need that. Like, so, like, with a slasher, you know, it's 2015. Chances are we've all seen at least one, so we know what the rules are, and, like, thanks to Scream, like, they spelled it out for us. So even if it's not addressed like, oh, we all know the rules, like, I think you still might need to have a taste of that, like, self-awareness of, like, I'm gonna go outside and not up the stairs
right
when this guy is chasing me. Like, I think you kind of need that. You need people to use their fucking brains. Like, their characters have to use their brains. We can't really get away with them just being stupid anymore.
Yeah,
what's fun about The Final Girls is that it kind of does that, where it's like, we're sitting as an audience, is, you know a horror film fanatic is sitting in the audience, and it's like, all right, in Friday the 13th and Halloween and all these horror films that I've seen, this is what the character does. And then it happens and you're like, wait a second. Like, why are they, like, this is familiar to me. This is exactly what happens in these movies. But it's just presented in such a unique and funny way. It just fucking works all across the board. Which, you know, I'm happy to see it coming back, because, you know, I'm not a fan of the two blending together, horror and comedy, but when it's done correctly and it's fresh, that's where it works.
Yeah, movies like Shaun of the Dead, like, it's works on kind of a parody level or a comedy level, but it's also a good zombie flick. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it works.
I mean, take Cabin in the Woods, for Christ's sake. You know, that was a big one. And then, you know, you had, one that doesn't get much play is Jacob Gentry's My Super Psycho Sweet 16.
I fucking love that movie so much.
Which, like,
it's hilarious.
You know, it's very, of course, it's produced by MTV, so that gives you that. But, you know,
why it's hilarious.
But it's done in such a way where, you know, it is a little fresh, fresh and new. But yeah, I think we're going along this line, even with, like, foreign films like Game of Werewolves and Witching and Bitching, we're getting to this point where it's harder to make us laugh and harder to make me laugh, and these movies are actually making me giggle.
Nice.
So, and that's an accomplishment, people. Because I don't fucking giggle in movies. I just sit
I
there with a stone,
like,
face.
An idiot watching The Editor. I know I've already talked about it on the show, but, like,
yeah,
that, like, that's another one that, like, I guess is very much. I don't know if you've ever seen the Astron 6, like, their shorts compilation.
Of course I have.
Oh my god, they're so funny. And they're all pretty much parodies of different subgenres. And
yeah,
they're fucking hilarious. Like, I love stuff like that. And I am glad to see that the appreciation is coming back. I really do. But as the magic of Google has shown us, it did all start with student bodies. And
it did.
Which is super awesome. And on that note, I'm going to die. So.
Right. Wow.
BJ is going to go night now.
I'm going to go.
And Brad and I will
time.
Continue.
I am very upset that I'm going to miss Brad, like, totally throw a jizz circus about Chud 2.
Oh, God.
But
here we go. Well, make sure you tune in, BJ.
I will. I'm looking at the timestamp so I know what to skip. So.
All right.
I already know what happens in this part. I heard it.
All right. We'll be talking to you again soon.
All right. Bye, guys. Right. Bye, listeners. Bye. I love all of you. Add me on Twitter. Bye.
All right, Brad, you there?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel sad that BJ has to go, but, you know, such is life. It's freaking late where you are. Or on the East Coast.
Well, we'll just keep going. I think we can wrap these two segments up.
I don't think we're
going
to spend an hour on Bud the Chud, but let's jump into this. First up is our Stream Screams segment.
Nate, wake up!
There's something very important I forgot to tell you.
Don't fucking scream at me!
You scream, I'll break your neck.
Don't scream, miss. Don't scream.
Which is frickin' Chud 2. Bud the Chud.
Chud 2.
Oh, God.
What's your problem with this movie?
You know, I think because I'm a fan of the original Chud,
which kind of blows.
It kind of blows, but you know, there's the creature design and everything, and I was kind of expecting that, you know.
But you would have the same, like, if you made another Chud movie, it would be a remake of the first one because there's nothing,
right?
Nothing special.
Well,
about
I was at
it.
Least and hoping for the creatures, and then Bud the Chud is basically, you know, a Weekend at Bernie's meets Return to the Living Dead, basically. With and he happens to have the Chud teeth, the zombie guy, Bud.
I think the people that dislike Return of the Living Dead 2 are the ones that dislike Chud 2 because they dislike fun.
Well, I haven't seen Return of the Living Dead 2.
It's very it feels like they were made at the exact same time. Like just how they're presented and how, you know, just everything works out.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, like let's talk about the first Chud. It has a serious. It's on a serious note.
Yeah, it's trying to be kind of a serious.
Stupid and ridiculous things happen. Someone eats a quarter for Christ's sakes. but no, this one was. It just took. It's a 80s comedy with fucking what's his name, Garrett Graham being Bud, which was fucking hysterical. You know, he's from, you know, Terrorvision and shit like that. But anyways. Just a really just fun and just groovy movie. Like just the things that just how everything happens is, you know, unexpected and just over the top. And, you know, coming off of Chud, I think this is a great sequel for something like that because the things with horror films. Yes. I love all of the Friday the 13th films and, you know, I love all the Halloween movies, but it's the same fucking movie over and over and over again. They're fun. Correct. Yes. But like with Chud, there's nothing special about Chud. It was fucking under, you know, cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers or whatever the other, you know, acronym stood for.
Right.
I forget what it was. But, you know, these creatures live underground and they come up and they attack people. Okay. That's it. We have to figure out how to destroy them. And John Goodman's probably going to do it at the end of the movie. But, you know, when you make a sequel to something like that, you're probably more than likely, you know, it's a fucking, you know, sequel of a, you know, a low-budget horror film.
Right.
And are you going to actually have fucking John Sayles, you know, well, actually, he wrote Alligator, which is funny. But, you know, John Sayles come in and do this fucking amazing screenplay or something? No. You're going to do the same thing over. But with Chud 2, the only bad part is that the original poster, they kind of make, you know, it looks like the Chuds are coming back, but
well, yeah.
It's only one. I mean, there are more Chuds, but it's strictly a slapstick comedy.
Yeah, but how do they branch the two? I mean, they have to make it kind of sort of follow the first one. So isn't it like the military had some sort of special program and they had created the Chuds and
yeah,
this is the last one.
Yeah, they state that this was a military program where the, you know, the soldiers would be – I think it's where the soldiers – it's in the beginning of the film. They talk about how the soldiers would be injected with this, like, serum.
If he was on his way to becoming a full-on underground monster-looking chud, he just hadn't got there yet?
No, they continue the story. Like, the chuds are a military experiment. Mm. But in this film, we realize that they're taking soldiers, injecting them with this serum. So when they're out on the field, they'll fight. So but when they die, they'll keep fighting.
So this is a different creature than the underground ones that we saw in the first one. That's how they kind of make the change. Because they obviously couldn't do the creatures, maybe for budgetary
reasons. Because it's homeless people, I think, is kind of what the chuds are. These... You know, and now, because that's where the test was, but they originally wanted to do it on, you know, soldiers.
Right, right.
But, I mean, none of it really, like, there's not this huge connection to it, but that's kind of the gist.
They make it, I mean, they don't just, it's not like they just slapped on, like, a number two. They actually did a little bit of thought on how to bridge the two.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just a fun movie. It's very upbeat and groovy, like I said. I mean, Wall of Voodoo did the fucking soundtrack of this movie. Like, how fucking cool is that
shit?
It's
a straight up, like, 80s comedy. I mean, but see, I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting, you know, which is kind of funny that these movies do that. And this isn't the first horror comedy that's totally changed gears. I mean, you look at House 2, you know, as opposed to the first House. House 2 is a straight up comedy.
Return of the Living Dead is funny and has those, you know, comedic moments, but Return of the Living Dead 2 takes it to a new level.
Yeah.
It's very slapsticky and funny.
So that's what they did here. Okay.
Yeah. Now, but I understand how it could go both ways. I mean, you could have a film, you know, like Chud, where, you know, you watch it and you're like, holy shit, this is really cool. There's fucking underground creatures that are zombies. Let me pop in the sequel. And then it's nothing like the first one.
Right.
I can understand how that could be upsetting. But as a horror film fan now, and you know what you're getting into, I think this is something that's shit on widely. But I think it's because people are coming off the first one. If you realize that the first one's kind of not a very good movie, like it's a fun movie. Like, it's not a bad movie at all. I enjoy Chud.
It's a B level monster flick. I mean,
yeah,
really,
but when you get to Chud
it.
2 and you have this completely different movie, there's a connection there with me. It's like, oh man, this is like a fun series now, because, you know, I'm not watching fucking Chud over again. I'm watching something new. I don't know. I've always kind of really, really dug that. And I always thought this film got super unfair. It just got shit on all over the place. Now, I mean, if you were fucking making, you know, a horror sequel to something on equivalent to Citizen Kane, that would be different. But we're fucking talking about Chud, for Christ's sakes. You know, which is, like I said, again, it's a good movie. It's a lot of fun. But, like, it's fucking Chud. And this one is just so, like, I can't help but smile through the whole film. Like, you have likable characters, you have a likable zombie thing, and you made a good point. It's like Weekend at Bernie's, almost. They're trying to take care of this fucking zombie, escapes, turn other people into zombies. You know, just the sequence where they go to the fucking dance, the Halloween dance, and they're all standing there, and she's like, you guys can come in, but the dog can't, and then they all groan, and she's like, okay, fine, the dog can come in, and they're like, but they end up eating her anyway. Like, it's just fucking, I don't know, it's so charming, it really is.
Did you think of It Follows when they had their plan?
The pool.
Yeah.
Dude, I totally thought about that. Yeah.
So the, you know,
I rewatched it a couple weeks ago, and I was like, "Holy shit!" I'm glad you said that. I felt that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, because they want to lure the chuds into the pool and then electrify it. You know, electrify the pool.
I will say, around that time, the film does kind of dive off. No pun intended, being up a pool and all. But I think it does kind of, you know, simmer. You know, it loses its flavor a little bit, but I think the ending is really fucking funny and good.
Yeah.
So it's unexpected.
So this is on Vudu, an HD copy.
HDX, 1080p.
HDX.
It's okay.
It's a little more pricey.
Really?
Than these other movies we want. I think it's like $13 or something like that.
No, this is $6.99.
Is it?
It's $6.99 or $7.99.
Oh, $7.99. You know what? Seriously, dude. 2 weeks ago, this was $13.99. Because I was looking things up.
Oh.
Okay, I might. You know, I would. If you're a fan of this film, plunk down $7.99. Yeah. I mean,
it's available is on like an 8-pack from Lionsgate.
I have that 8-pack, and I broke out the 8-pack.
Yeah, and this is another Lionsgate, which I think all the films we've been talking about are Lionsgate.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is another Lionsgate film that's only available on some multi-pack on DVD. Transfer's decent. The sound's actually really good because, I mean, Wall of Voodoo, if people don't know, I mean, Wall of Voodoo is pretty badass. Great band, and they do most of the music. And then the theme song, Bud the Chud, is fucking great. When he's doing his weird walk and that, you know, the drums kick in and it's playing,
Like,
I just laugh and I just smile each time that happens.
Oh, man. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I think it's a great sequel. I think it's a lot of fun. For people that like horror and comedy, since we're on the subject, I think it's a great film. And if you don't like it, you know, come off of it. Get off your high horse from thinking it's going to be something like Chud. And watch the movie as, you know, a standalone movie. Now, if you're like a diehard fan of Chud, then maybe not. But I don't understand. I don't see anybody being a diehard fan of Chud.
Like I said, I always try to look for the positives in a film, and it's what I do think is to this movie's benefit is it does, you know, act as a standalone film. You don't have to have seen the other ones, and this is a completely different film than the first one. You know, they give you everything you need to know at the beginning of the flick in that army base or whatever, and they move on from there with a completely different movie than the first one. So, I mean, it's almost like they could have got away without calling this Chud 2. But but I don't know. I mean, that's the whole thing, you know, going into a movie, being a fan of the original and getting something completely different and unexpected. I wasn't expecting, a horror comedy. I was kind of expecting a cheesy monster flick. And
I'm
got
curious
something
about, I've never watched the trailer, but I'm curious if they actually...
Oh yeah,
this as a horror comedy.
Huh? Yeah, that'd be interesting to find out. We'll have to track it down. All right. Well, that's all I got to say about Chud 2. Let's move on to a better movie though. In our VHS. Oh my god. No video. Oh my god.
Oh my god.
I'm always going to screw that up.
Yeah, I know. I know, Sean. It's okay.
The key.
Well, here we are at last. Right where we ought to be. Video.
Oh my god!
Well, when I abbreviate it, I do VHS OMG. And I abbreviate it when we're texting back and forth, so.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do? Dude. You have mentioned this one before. Was it during our Blaxploitation? When we were talking about Blaxploitation?
I don't know. I talk about this movie a lot.
Well, you talked about it, and then I finally saw it. Enemy Territory. I can't talk. Enemy Territory from 1987. What a badass little flick, man.
Dude, it's so much fun.
Basically, a white insurance agent gets stuck in a high-rise apartment complex.
Which is already automatically a great plot.
Yep. And overrun by a gang called the Vampires. And he needs to get out, basically.
Yep.
It's great.
It's just so fun because it's so cheesy at the same time. But since we're talking about it and have to talk people into this has so many horror undertones, it's fucking ridiculous. So in a way, it's a horror film. Because, I mean, we already have a gang called the Vampires. But...
Well, at the beginning, you almost think, like...
Yes.
Because I've never seen this. I was like...
Portrayed as, like, real vampires.
Yeah, so I'm like, are these guys going to be come really out, vampires?
They
can't,
yeah, they can only come out at night. But, you know, not... This is spoiler-free... But hidden at the ending even, it's like, holy shit. Like, just the way they shot that in the daylight, you're like, oh my god. Like, this is totally a fucking vampire movie in a way. I don't know. It's just a lot of horror undertones.
Yeah, they definitely keep the gang operates off of these kind of, like, very much vampire lore or whatever, because there's two guys that are like, all right, we will, when the sun comes up, that's when the cops are out, because at night the cops say, fuck this place, we're not fucking slayers. Yeah, and but Tony Todd plays the Count.
He's so fucking good.
And was this one of his first movies?
I imagine so, yeah.
Because he's super young in this, and he's, like, he's really badass. Like, he's really intimidating. He's not playing this, like, slow-talking...
he's not being mysterious. He's evil.
Yeah, he's this... it took me a while to get used to him talking fast and, like, with a normal voice, you know, not trying to be scary or, you know, Candyman, right? But yeah, he's really great in it. All the acting, like, there's that young kid that, like, what really struck me was that in the beginning of the movie when, before the insurance guy shows up, it's these two black kids walking towards the apartment complex, and what were they talking about? Like, their conversation was so great. I don't know if they're talking video games or what, but it's like, I almost wanted to just follow those kids earlier and hear the whole conversation leading up on their walk to the apartment complex. Cause
yeah, it reminds me of Probs and Mayhem from Attack the Block.
Yeah.
So, but that's great. You know, it's just from the director, this is Peter, what's his last name? Manunagan or something like that. He's the director of Demonic Toys, Seed People, Arena is another one of his films.
Oh, nice.
Which I know you like. So, yeah, Arena. He did, like...
Arena Kickass.
He did that Dungeon Master movie. So, yeah, he's a lot of fun. He's a very fun director. So it's kind of sad. He tapered off.
The Eliminators. 1986.
I don't think I know what that is.
This guy gets, like, hooked onto, like, this... It would be a great double feature with what's that Astron 6 flick
that kind Manborg?
Of feature? Manborg. It's basically like a serious version of Manborg. It's great.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
It's really bad.
What's it called?
Eliminators. Yeah, it came in like a Shout Factory 4-pack with Arena.
Is like somebody like wearing like a steel suit and it looks like they're blowing in the wind.
I don't know. All I know is like they hook him into this like tank body, and he's like trying. It's pretty fantastic.
So yeah, I mean, Enemy Territory. Now, when I very first heard about this film, I have actually a unique backstory to this one. I didn't see this when I was younger. I saw it, I don't know, maybe about 4 or 5 years ago for the first time. I watched this British film called Tony, and it's about a serial killer. And Tony just goes around killing people, but he buys VHS tapes, and he's obsessed with movies. And it's like kind of this undertone to the film where he's obsessed, and he goes to buy tapes, and you know, he like goes like it's really odd because it's just like this little side story where he goes into a place and he's like, "Hey, do you guys have tapes?" And they're like, "No, we have movies, DVDs." And he's like, "No, I need VHS tapes." And so, like, he's very proud of his VHS collection. And it doesn't feel out of place at all, but like he invites people over to watch movies, and then he ends up killing them.
Oh, man.
And then he's just one guy he has in his apartment. He's like, you know, what do you want to watch? And he's like, well, I have any names. He's like three movies. And then he just says, I have this movie, Enemy Territory, where this, you know, insurance salesman, like how you pitched it, gets caught up in this high rise with a gang called the Vampires. I was like, man, that sounds really fucking cool. And then I like looked it up, and I saw it was directed by Peter, Manunagan or whatever his name is. And man, I was fucking had to find this shit on VHS because it's the only format it was. And I finally found it, and I was like, wow, this movie's like really fucking cool. Like it's really like it's legitimately like a good movie too. Like there's no downtime. It gets really insane. I mean, just the character of Psycho is fucking hilarious. Whenever Tony Todd is like Psycho when he calls upon him, but you know, just a very fun action movie. You know, if anybody, you know, it's like Demons. You know, like Demons 2 when they're caught in the high rise, or you know, the movie called The Horde. Have you ever seen a French zombie movie called The Horde?
Yep.
I love premises like that where they're at the top and they got to go beat their way down. And you know, Jan Michael Vincent's in this too. Is it Jan Michael or is it Michael Jan?
Jan Michael Vincent.
Yeah, Jan Michael Vincent. He's in this shit, and he's like he overacts like a motherfucker.
He plays the Vietnam vet, right?
Yeah, he's the Vietnam vet. And he's like so paranoid about everything, and then he just goes off on that ramble about like how he feeds, like he gives the food to his cats first because he's afraid he's going to be poisoned. He's like, you see that cat there? That's who tastes my food before I eat it.
And then he said something about sometimes I gotta shoot him and then get a new cat.
But it's like very incoherent. Like he's obviously crazy, but you know, it just feels. It's just an odd character. But I think the best part about this film is Ray Parker Jr., the guy who sings Ghostbusters, is fucking. He plays the hero,
build, man.
Yeah, he's second bill, and he's a fucking hero of the movie, and it's just like so out of place.
He's really good though, man. Like he's really good in it.
Yeah, no, he's definitely. It's always funny whenever he, you know, he's like, "Why'd you help me?" He's like, "I heard gunshots. There's a white man out here crying." You know, it just comes together so well, and the chemistry between the two just work, and then Stacey Dash is in it, who's always have been like super cute. But I don't know. It's so well put together. And if you look at this on IMDb, it's got a fucking, I'm looking at it right now, 6.4 rating.
It's pretty high for IMDb.
That's huge for some corny 80s action movie.
Yeah.
So, this is something that you have to find other means of finding because it's not available on DVD. I don't even think this is available anywhere on DVD.
It's a shame. I mean, this one it deserves to be discovered and championed, I think. I mean, when it first started, I was a little worried because it's just the main character or Gary
that
Frank
office setting is just so odd.
And
it's like, are you filming this in your house?
Right, and the one-way conversation, which I hate, like, on the phone where he's obviously trying to talk to somebody else, but...
But once he gets to the apartment.
For me, it was like once those two kids showed up, I was like, all right, this is going to be good because this dialogue was just so snappy. And you can tell, like, that's kind of like the whoever wrote the script really had, you know, a way with dialogue outside of the office setting, per se. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was in his element. More of an, he was better with like the more of the city and the urban element than he was with the stuffy office stuff. But once it gets there, the dialogue is great. It moves, and I had a lot of fun with this one. I would love to own this. You know, would love to have this. Some company get a hold of this. Is this a MGM title, or do we know who?
Let me see. I'm trying to look at my tape from here. It looks like it's Fox actually.
Okay.
Because this is a CBS Fox tape, and I don't think it was released on any other label. So Fox might still own it.
And this didn't get a DVD at all, did it?
Nope, that's the reason why it's on this segment.
Damn it.
But another thing that's a lot of fun about the film is just how it has this kind of Assault on Precinct 13 attitude where the vampires don't care. You know, where they're like, oh, shit, you fucked with us. We are going to go after you and, like, we'll, like, run right up to you with a shotgun held to our head. If we die, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes the movie to a new level. Even though it's corny and cheesy, it keeps that adrenaline running. And it's something that a lot of films that can't keep up. Like, once everything kind of, you know, within 15 minutes, we understand what's happening and the action starts. And it doesn't let up ever. Like, they're constantly on the run. And the only downtime is actually when they get to, you know, Jan Michael Vincent's apartment. There's just the big steel, you know, steel compound. Yeah.
But once they get there, it's slower and there's dialogue. But he owns that scene, you know, he owns those moments that it's. It doesn't matter that we're having some exposition and character time. It's just such an odd departure from everything else we've been seeing. So, yeah, definitely track this down. It's probably on YouTube.
Yeah.
Or
well, you gotta find something because it's definitely
find some other means. But yeah. You know, talk about it, keep it alive. Like you know, some company needs to find this and put it out because it's definitely worth it, man. At least like just for Tony Todd himself, man. Just to have that guy. His body of work, you know, I'm surprised.
Well, he's going to be at this, he's going to be at Spooky Empire, which is a horror convention, not too far away from where I live. So
you
I'll
need
probably
to have
go
him sign your VHS tape, man.
Well, actually, I talked to him on Twitter every once in a while, cause he was originally going to come on the show for our Candyman, episode, but he's a busy guy, so it just never worked out. But he's very, very nice. It's like incredible. Like you just don't think about it, like how nice sometimes they are. Because I guess we're so used to the Hollywood attitude, of like, oh, we're better than you. Don't touch me. Don't talk to me.
Yeah.
But we kind of forget like these people aren't really Hollywood, and they actually like the attention and they love their fans. That's probably the reason why they still work.
Yeah.
But he's just an all around nice guy. So I think I'm going to talk to him and be like, dude, you remember Enemy Territory? And just see what he says. Like take the tape with me and just see his reaction.
That'd be awesome.
I just don't see a lot of people mentioning that film because even though, I turned a lot of people on to this movie, but you just don't hear a lot of people talk about it. You know, it's one of those VHS titles that just kind of sit there that people don't mention.
Yeah.
So it's definitely waiting to be rediscovered.
Well, all of you listeners have some homework. Track down Enemy Territory and bug everyone about it.
Also, another thing, back to Chud 2.
Oh,
this is some little fun fact.
Okay.
Nothing really about the film, but another reason why it's so, like, it hit so hard when I was younger is that the Center for like Disease Control, like the CDC that they talk about.
Yeah.
It's called Winter Haven.
Oh.
Well, that's the city that I live in when I was younger. I lived in Winter Haven, Florida, which is, like 5 minutes away from Lakeland where I live now. But Winter Haven, and then he says the comment, it's in this little podunk town. And that's exactly how everybody describes Winter Haven.
Nice.
It's in a podunk town. So I always found that fucking hilarious. So
awesome.
It happened near me.
It did.
So, all
right, man. Well, I think it's time to wrap up, dude.
Yeah, I think we covered everything.
Track down Enemy Territory. Give it some love, any means possible right now, I guess, with that film. But this would be a fun one to see an HD release on.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
It would be fun to hear Tony Todd recollect about it too, because he's not just some sideline player; like he's the villain, So it'd be great to hear him reminisce about it. If we had a Blu-ray label, we would probably track it down. But takes money and
well,
time.
Fox owns it. There's no chance. They're about as Lionsgate.
I know. We don't even have a decent copy of the Abyss.
Yeah.
Or
it's not happening.
Or True Lies. What the fuck, people? It's 2015. I'm mad about that. That's my one thing.
It's fine. I'm mad too.
I'm a little upset. I'm gonna go punch a kitten.
No, dude.
I'm not gonna punch a kitten. Don't worry.
Fucking punch like a person. Punch a kid or something.
Go punch a child who's eating ice cream. I'm gonna just punch him right in the face. It splatters all over himself.
Jesus Christ! How about if we just end the show now?
All right, all of you guys have a great week. Go to thescreamcast.com, click on our sponsors link, and give them some love. Coffee Shop of Horrors, Grindhouse Video. Of course, Wolfman of Mars and Kevin Spencer. Hire Kevin Spencer to draw some shit, because he did our logo and we love him. He's a nice guy too. We'll talk to all of you next week, right?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I promise I'll be changing our header BJ mentioned the other reminded me the other last week that she's not on there. So I promise I'll do that this week. Putting that out there.
Sign up for Exploitation TV.
Yes. Dude, sign up for Exploitation TV.
We'll talk about more about that in the future.
Full on, live, ready to go. Sign up and smut till you drop.
Or horror. There's a lot of horror in there, too.
There is. I had a lot of fun browsing through that. More things for me to watch. All right. Yep. All of you, have a great week. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
All right. See ya.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.